Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Jindal Stainless Limited Q2 and H1 FY23 earnings conference call hosted by Nuvama Wealth Management. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ashish Kejriwal from Nuvama Wealth Management. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yes. Thank you, Vivian. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Nuvama Wealth Management, we welcome you all for this Q2 and H1 FY23 post-result conference call of Jindal Stainless and Jindal Stainless Hisar. We are pleased to have here Mr. Abhyuday Jindal, Managing Director, JSL and JSHL, Mr. Anurag Mantri, Group CFO, Jindal Stainless, Mr. Ramnik Gupta, CFO, Jindal Stainless Hisar, Mr. Gautam Chakraborty, and Ms. Shreya Sharma from the IR team. We are pleased to note that, this quarter, despite the difficult situation, company has reported EBITDA pattern of 15,000+, which makes first half FY23 total EBITDA pattern of around 18,000+, which is in line with their guidance. I hope management will continue to maintain that guidance, and after that, I can just hand over the call to Gautam for further proceedings. Over to you, Gautam.
Yeah. Thanks, Ashish, and good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. We'll begin this call with a brief opening remarks from the management, following which we'll open the floor for an interactive question and answer session. Before we start, I would like to state that some of the statements made in today's conference call may be forward-looking in nature, and a disclaimer in this regard is available in our result presentation, which was shared earlier with you. I would now hand over the floor to Mr. Abhyuday Jindal for his opening remarks.
Thank you, Gautam, and good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of the management team, let me welcome you to the earnings call for Q2 FY23 of Jindal Stainless Limited and Jindal Stainless Hisar Limited. I would first like to discuss the key business highlights of the quarter, following which Anurag will take you through our operational and financial performance. Globally, demand for stainless steel decelerated throughout Q2 FY23, primarily on account of high energy costs, inflationary pressure, aggressive rate hikes by the U.S. Fed, and recession risk in key economies. On the domestic front, demand from end user segment continued to be strong. Development and supply of niche value-added stainless steel grades and critical materials across various sectors and our agile business model allowed us to effectively increase our sales volume and achieve highest ever quarterly domestic sales of around 95% on the total sales volume. Demand continued to remain steady in the automobile sector, registering a growth of nearly 28% quarter-on-quarter basis. The company supplied new stainless steel grades, including 432, along with existing grades like 436L and 439 to various auto majors. In the P&T segment, average sales in Q2 FY23 increased by 41% over Q1 FY23. Demand was also strong in the lift and elevator segment. Indian Railways continued its thrust on increasing its share of business in freight. This led to a 25% jump in our sales to the railway wagon segment. We also see strong opportunities in coach segment too. Vande Bharat train sets will remain a major focus area for the railways. It is also heartening to note that India is expected to invest rupees 80,000 crore in metro projects over the next five years, which will further increase the opportunity for our premium stainless steel offerings. On the export front, stainless steel industry has been facing continuous challenges with no relief on the export duty front. During Q2 FY23 and H1 FY23, combined exports stood at around 5% and 13% of the total sales respectively. Domestic sales volume, on the other hand, has remarkably increased, compensating for the volume loss in the export markets. I am pleased to inform you all that we have successfully developed and stabilized various stainless steel grades in the 400 series. We have also concluded multiple strategic orders for the specialty grade from the Lean Duplex family. Additionally, we have dispatched our first ever order of 304 grade for ISRO's critical application requirements. On the ESG front, let me update you that we have initiated Project Amanve with EY in order to for two-pronged strategy: A, to achieve its environmental social governance goals, and two, is predict greenhouse gases emissions and set carbon neutrality targets in accordance with the science-based target initiative. We are dedicatedly taking up real-time environment surveillance monitoring for air quality, water quality, work zone monitoring, effluent analysis, and noise at various locations. We also carried out a plantation drive of over 2,500 trees inside the premises. GFHL has successfully commissioned a 3.5 megawatt rooftop solar power generation project. We are actively evaluating renewable energy projects for our future power requirements. In addition to this, the company has set an organizational goal to reduce its carbon emissions by over 1 lakh tons in FY23 for the merged entity. We are cognizant of our environmental responsibility and are committed to helping the nation prepare for a sustainable future. With this, I would like to hand over to Anurag to discuss the operational and financial performances.
Thank you, Abhilash. Good afternoon, everyone, and a warm welcome on the call today. Hope you had a chance to go through our earnings presentation, which was shared with the stock exchanges, and today's call discussion will be on the same lines. As Abhilash mentioned, and as you all know, that this quarter witnessed the major impact of the export duty coupled with the ongoing challenges in the global macro situation. Raw material prices too continue to remain volatile during the quarter, with nickel prices falling by 24% quarter on quarter and those of ferrochrome by 18% on quarter on quarter. This impacted the realization and profitability of domestic manufacturers. Despite these challenges, we could adopt to the change market dynamics quickly and emphasized our focus on the domestic sales through development and supply of niche value-added stainless steel grades and efficiently increasing our volume across segments, especially into auto, railways, pipe and tubes, and lifts and elevators. Let me now discuss the operational and financial performance during Q2 and H1 FY23. Backed by strong sales volume, the pro forma combined revenue of Q2 FY23 rose by 10% and 6% respectively on YOY and QOQ basis to Rs. 8,628 crores. EBITDA and PAT were recorded at Rs. 694 and Rs. 360 crores respectively. On a half-yearly basis, the pro forma combined revenue grew by 19% YOY to Rs. 15,744 crores. EBITDA and PAT for the same period stood at Rs. 1,526 crores and Rs. 836 crores respectively. Performance of the global subsidiary was adversely impacted, as mentioned by Ravide, due to the tough global headwinds, inflationary pressures and recession risk in the key economies and export duty. On a half-yearly basis, however, our combined EBITDA of all the operating subsidiaries stood at 78 crores. At the end of Q2 H1 FY23, our pro forma combined entity net debt stood at Rs. 2,757 crores, down by 42% and 12% respectively as against FY20 and FY22 levels. Despite being in the capex cycle, we continue to focus on the robust balance sheet and prudent capital allocation, which has helped us to improve our leverage ratios of the combined entity with the debt equity of 0.3x and debt EBITDA of 0.7x, which is one of the best in the metal sector. On the merger update, let me intimate you that NCLT has given the next date of hearing on November 11, 2022. The merger is expected to complete in FY23. Also, I am pleased to inform you that the shareholders of JSL approved acquisition of 74% of JUSL from OPJSTPL through postal ballot with an overwhelming majority on September 3, 2022. Our agile business strategy has been helpful in supporting our overall performance during the challenging times. We will continue to focus on our core strengths to optimize our operational and financial performance going ahead. With this, I would like to end my discussion and would request the moderator to open the floor for the Q&A session. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Participants who wish to ask a question may kindly press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Amit Dixit from ICICI Securities. Kindly proceed.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. And congratulations for a good set of numbers in a very challenging quarter. I have three questions. The first one is on essentially volume growth. We saw very impressive volume growth QOQ in both JSL and JSHL. While you have highlighted certain segments, railways, autos, that contribute to growth, just wanted to understand, better where this growth is coming from, particularly in 200 series, whether it is 300 or 400. Was there any pent-up demand in certain segments that you expect to taper off? And what about the volume guidance for the year? That is the first question.
Okay, thanks, Amit. As we mentioned, the volume growth was in the domestic market for us came across the segment. And because most of the volumes we actually then diverted to a domestic market due to the export duty. And good thing was that some of these growth which came into the premium segment, which is like auto. Auto average sales grew almost 28% on quarter-on-quarter basis due to the steady demand in this. Similarly, railway, the growth primarily came from SS usage in the wagons. So wagons, because on the freight side, the railway continued to increase focus, which then wagons took us the good demand from of our overall sales mix. Pipe and tube was another segment which grew almost 41% on quarter-on-quarter basis due to the good demand from construction and infra. So it was across, then their lift and elevator was also like we captured almost 95% of the shares of the market, and with supplies to all the major elevators, which is Kohn, Otis, Mitsubishi, Schindler. So this is the across. So it was all across the spectrum of the various segments. On your question was on the mix, then I have a second question. So because of this, the overall, if you see, 400 series volumes in JSL share was almost 31%, and 300 series, which was last year about 56, has come down to 46%, and 200 series also increased 18 to 23%. So that's how basically it's because the volume, the demand was coming across the segment, and we were able to capture balancing between the volumes and the price. So we continue to choose the segments carefully.
Okay, and what about the guidance? Because we heard that last time, it was a slightly muted guidance. So would you revise your guidance upward?
So last time we gave the guidance of 5 to 10% volume dip expected than the FY22. Now, I think with this trend, we are expecting we will close at least a flat volume growth with in line with FY22 of so at this stage, so we are upgrading the guidance in terms of the volumes, which was earlier expected to be down by 5 to 10% from FY22 level. But now we at least we expect that FY23 has to, should be flat off FY22 level.
Okay, great. The second question is on the CapEx spend. So the number in cash flow statement indicates that the ongoing expansion projects have gathered momentum. So the CapEx spend has also gone up. So would you please let us know the status of completion of the brownfield expansion at JSL? And whether it would be like we can expect some volume growth from it towards the end of FY24?
CapEx, all the CapExes are on track, and everything is what guidance we give. All the facilities will come within that timeline. So that's on the CapEx side. On the growth side, we were expecting a faster pace, but I would say we'll have to watch the next two quarters carefully. With that, we will see. We are still expecting that at least 20% growth we should be able to deliver in FY 23 over 23. But I think we will rather watch the development. Out of the new capacity, we are expecting at least 30% capacity utilization can be achievable despite all the other challenges if continue to remain like that way in FY 24.
Wonderful. The last question is on the share of imports. So if you can quantify the share of imports in domestic consumption in Q2 FY 23, and what was the increase in exports from imports from China and Indonesia? You used to provide this information in press release earlier, but this time I don't know why it got missed.
The imports in this quarter was close to 32-35% of the overall overall consumption in the country. Chinese imports continue to hover. It used to be 60,000 in June, came down actually to less than 40, but again it has crossed, reaching almost 50,000 in September. So it's been up and down on the Chinese import side.
And Indonesia?
Indonesia, we are seeing a declining trend in the import side. It used to be 20,000 plus. It's right now running at less than 10,000.
Okay. So did we decrease import pressure and, you know, our own volume growth? That should give you a lot of confidence actually to deliver, you know, good volume in H2 also, if imports remain, I mean, or go down further, I guess.
Yes, that's the reason we are revising our guidance of, instead of volume decline, we are saying at least the flat volume is looks achievable at this stage now, with our confidence level what we delivered in Q2.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks a lot and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajesh Majumdar from BNK Securities. Kindly proceed.
Good afternoon, sir, and congratulations once again for a decent set of numbers. So my question was, sir, we have seen the effect of high-cost inventories also in this quarter, right, getting liquidated because of the high increase in volumes. So what would be the extent of that inventory liquidation impact? And since the prices are again forming now, especially ferrochrome, etc., what kind of inventory-related loss can come back in 3Q and 4Q? That was the first question.
Rajesh, in our business, actually, because it's a balancing between the volume and the realization and the margin. So it's difficult to segregate the inventory valuations number in a concrete manner. But typically, the trend which we have been saying, it gets almost a time lag of 40 to 45 days to pass on to the customer. So in a downward raw material trend, we always get a negative valuation impact, which was there in the quarter also because of the downward movement in the prices. But quantifying that number looks difficult. So that's why the guidance we give is actually 18,000. We are taking care of everything which could come into the play during these volatile times. So we are not segregating that guidance that in case of a continuous trend, we will not be able to deliver such volumes.
Right, right, sir. Fine. And my second question was, sir, recently we've been seeing a hardening of the spread in SS300 series particularly, where the product prices have been firm and increasing somewhat, whereas from September onwards, there is a sharp decline in the scrap prices. And I know you have a longer term contract and all that. So what is the impact? Because the overall impact on the spread is nearly 15,000 plus rupees per ton. So obviously, the entire thing cannot be captured in terms of the spot spreads. But what kind of impact on that can we see in 3Q and more in 4Q?
See, Rajesh, actually, the raw material is also, again, the source of raw material and the price we select on our supply chain is also a combination. So that it's difficult to, because see what happens when the raw material and the scrap prices start falling, the spot prices of the finished goods also start adjusting immediately. And also because we have to lift a larger quantity of raw material. So we have seen the moment we pause for some time in the scrap market, we see suddenly the prices falling down. But when we start gathering the quantity, the prices start going up immediately. So those scraps are available for the limited quantity. So that's the reason it's a very fine balancing of the various raw material sources for us.
No, but the widening of the spreads or the flattening should matter to you in terms of the overall profitability of the product to some extent. I mean, even if you are saying that the quantity is impacted, impact the prices. Like, for example, SS scrap has fallen from nearly 304 scrap has fallen from 1,38,000 to 1,18,000. And the finished prices have actually gone up, is what the 1.5 month data suggests. So that means a sharp increase in the spot spread. So my question is, sir, how much of the spot spread impact actually comes in for us? If we can get some kind of a judgment on that.
So let me give you two parts to this. One is that why it cannot be exactly reflected, because one is that it also depends on the sales mix which we are selling. So as we mentioned, like auto, railway, if you are more on the 400 series, SS scrap will not matter that much.
Right.
So that's one part, because it's always, and for us, then we don't go with that this much of 400 series mix has to be sold or this much of 300. What we go with that, how we capture the best margin orders for the across the various segments irrespective of the grade. That's what how our business strategy moves, which is helping us in terms of maintaining the more consistent volumes and the growth in the earning side. Second part is that the scrap also, so the moment we have seen in the market, we pause for some of the scrap buying, we see the prices going down, but the moment we start buying as a large buyer, we see that initial those price sources are actually limited in terms of the quantity. So it's much more complicated than, it's like a similarly way of stock buying, let me tell you, because when you start getting the large order, we see suddenly the prices, the next order goes into the larger price. So it's
and
a very fine balance.
Also to add that domestic SS scrap is not our only source of nickel or SS or scrap that we buy. You know, so it is only domestic, what you are saying is correct, there has been a sharp decrease, but in the world market and other forms of nickel, there hasn't been any major. So we need to look at all our sources.
Okay, so let me just ask you a final question, Ranvalji. Would you hazard a higher EBITDA per ton for 2H as compared to earlier guidance because of all the factors of inventory and spread, etc., because it's like, since the actual numbers are more complicated, would you hazard a slightly higher profitability figure for the rest of the year?
Not right now. We will say that we will not change the guidance right now. FY23, what, 18,000, I think we will maintain at this stage, and we'll rather watch for one more quarter the trend.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ritesh from Investec. Kindly proceed.
Yeah, hi sir. Thanks for the opportunity, sir. I have four questions. First question is, one is on JSL, JUSL. What are the incremental milestones that we have to look at? Secondly, if you can just help us the debt and EBITDA numbers for JUSL for first half. So that's the first question. The second question is, any update on MCL? Third question is, if at all reduction in pledges, by when can we see that? And the fourth question is, what will make us again competitive on exports? We know that we have Section 232, Europe, there are additional duties which are there, given by European Union plus the government's 15% export taxes. So if the export volumes has to move up again, what is it that we are doing about it? Those are the four broader questions. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks, Ritesh. Let me just try to see. If I missed some question, I think you can again ask me that question, I think, because you have asked too many questions. But let me try to see what I captured. One is that you asked about the JUSL debt and EBITDA. The JUSL current debt is around 1965 crores, and the EBITDA for the H1 was 275 crores. That's one question. Second question was on the pledge, right? Reduction of the pledge. Reduction of pledge, as we mentioned, the banks are completely aligned. I think it's taking a more a process time to how to actually navigate that into the whatever has been released. But let me tell you the good story is that all the term debt which was having a pledge has been repaid. So there is no term debt right now which has a pledge right now in the JSL. The pledge which is getting reflected now only on the working capital. So, see, for term debt it was easier because we repaid the thing and we got it refinanced with the new debt. In the none of the new debt we have given the pledge. So, there is no term loan now existing in JSL which has a pledge. Working capital thing, unfortunately, because of especially the LC thing which is ongoing, there cannot be a one-day cutoff for the repayment and taking the new facility. So it's a process which we need to obviously get the pledge released from the old CDR lender, which is led by SBI. So which we are actually in the process, and they are assuring us because even in their new loan of term debt, which they have extended to us for the project, there is no pledge and in that particular loan. So they have removed all the pledge and subsidiary pledge requirement of the new loan and disbursed that new loan on that basis. So just I think I know we have been saying that, and we are also a bit of disappointed by the progress at the PSU lenders on working capital side. But as a proactive step, what we have done, we have repaid entire term debt in JSL, which was on a pledge, and refinance it with the new debt which was not in the pledge. JSHL is still existing, but we will be we are just waiting because of the certain assurance. Otherwise, we will do the same exercise in JSHL, and we will not have any of the share term debt which will have a pledge.
That's useful. Update on NCLTs and then the export question.
See, MCL, the matter is in court, obviously, there was a bidding process, and it's in public news that the three key parties were there in the bids were actually us and two other players. And we were the front runner. However, in between, obviously, it was challenged at the court. And in between, the lenders also offered a loan to the ARC to offload their loan, which was led by an Arcel offer, because resolution sometimes can go long. So that process was also run separately, but other matters isn't right. So right now, there is nothing to update on the progress of NCL. I think it will take its own course. Other thing was on export side. Your question on export side is that how can we gain the volume in export market? Is that the question?
So the question is, government imposed 15% export taxes. That's one thing. Prior to that, European Union imposed taxes on India, China, and Indonesia. We were still able to export into Europe despite that move. But at that point of time, we did indicate that we will still be competitive in the US market. So I think export market is probably important and probably more lucrative. So if we have to regain our competitiveness back, what are the regions that we are looking at? So when it was Europe, we did indicate about US, but US also has Section 232. So what are the other regions that we are looking at? Say hypothetically, if the domestic market is sluggish, is export even an option for us? How should we look at it?
Yeah, maybe because see, right now there was obviously recessionary risk and inflationary trend and all sort of thing in both the market. But let Abhijay answer this question, that how the recovery can come in export market.
So Ritesh, thanks for your question. Basically, definitely with the export duty overhang, it is going to be a big challenge for us. And like if you said, this Section 230 plus mode in Europe. So as of now, it is a challenge. But because of our long-standing quality, approvals that we have, our customers are still sticking with us. They still want to still take some quantity. So despite selling at a very low margin export, we're still continuing that, and we will still continue to the tune of if it does get further sluggish. Domestic, we're seeing good demand, and we're seeing good play in all segments. You know, if we are infrastructure and auto and railway. Railway, especially Q4, always picks up. They always drag behind for the full year, and Q4 is always a bumper time for railways. So we don't see any real sluggish or slowdown in demand in the domestic market. That we're still quite bullish on. But with the export duty overhang, increasing export sales with the way the world market is in sort of a recession right now, it is looking like a challenge. So we're quite bullish that domestic will volumes will be maintained and they will further grow. And whenever required at very low margin, we can always push the export volume. As of now, we don't want to do that.
Sure. If I have to just rephrase the question, given the volatility that we have seen in the commodity prices, I'm pretty sure that our mix on 200, 300 and 400 series would have changed on a quarter-on-quarter or year-on-year basis. Even if for that change, would you assure investors that our profitability, when we look at it on an EBITDA per ton basis, it is something which is pretty much similar across the three grades and it would not have much bearing on the profitability going forward?
So our overall guidance we will still maintain. Between the three grades, there is definitely variation and there are certain segments and certain low-paying segments. But our overall guidance combined all three between 18 to 20, I think we will still maintain that.
Sure. Thank you so much for the answers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, kindly press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Vikas Singh from Philip Capital. Kindly proceed.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Sir, I just wanted to understand this 20% growth in FY24, which you are emphasizing. So, is this taking into assumption that the exports would resume, or you see the scope that only from the domestic demand you would be able to take up that, let's say, 15 or 20% growth in FY24? And if so, we are obviously talking about much higher growth than the industry level. So, where this growth are coming from, basically?
See, let me just clarify that it's not that we are guiding right now for the growth on FY24 over FY23. That's what I said. We'll have to directionally we should target that, but it's not the guidance right now, and we'll have to watch for another 2 quarters. That's what I mentioned. So that's first clarification. Second, what we the question was asked about the new capacity utilization. So earlier we would have ramped it up much faster, but at this stage also we are working to ramp up at least for the 30% of the enhanced capacity utilization during this period, 25 to 30%. That's what our endeavor, but I think for guidance of 24 number, I think that's what overall we can assure you that what we are working is that at least the new capacity which comes, at least 25 to 30% of that utilization we should be targeting to ramp up. But I think the next earning call will be the best time to give us the FY24 firm guidance.
Understood, sir. Thank you for clarification. So my next question pertains to once this capacity comes in terms of 30% utilization or 50 or 100%, how the operating leverage moves, sir? Have we done any internal calculation which you could which you could give us also a kind of idea that what kind of the operating leverage would come into play?
What do you mean by operating leverage? Are you talking about
the EBITDA per ton, the fixed cost element would get spread further. So some more savings would be coming in because of the higher utilization level.
Right now, effectively, if I understand, you are asking for FY24 EBITDA per ton guidance. Let me tell you, which is a bit early for us to say right now, because see, ultimately, it will be a fine combination that you would have seen in the last two quarters. We'll have to have a very fine balancing between our volume and the price segment which we want to go. We have an opportunity. India is still dominated by imports in SS. So technically, we can sell the entire volume, but at what price point and what price product quality we will compromise, that will have to be a very, very fine balancing. And we want to keep our thing into the premium and niche segment and more on a quality segment, not getting into a substandard quality segment and compete on the price. So it's a bit complicated than what it looks like. That's what I'm saying. It's difficult to have an EBITDA per ton guidance that incremental saving which will be able to achieve to increase the EBITDA per ton guidance at this stage. I think let's wait for some time how we move development in the external market moves and how the other segments in the domestic market move. And we will give you that guidance on. So when we give the guidance, we take care of all the things in terms of the inventory valuation, in terms of the various savings which will be coming from the which will through operating efficiencies and sourcing efficiencies which we keep working on.
So sir, fair enough. So just one more question in terms of in the general stainless, our subsidiaries had made losses. So just wanted to understand, is it there some one-offs which translated to the loss at the EBITDA level? Or how are they doing right now? Has the situation improved?
Yes. So I think globally, global subsidiaries were actually, as we mentioned, the global markets are actually under downward pressure in stainless steel. One was because of across the economies which are facing the recessionary risk and inflation pressure. So we saw challenges on the European market. Abhinay, you want to explain to this?
Can you repeat the question?
Yes, so I was talking about the basically European subsidiaries making losses and some other subsidiaries also. Total loss in the JSL level is roughly
Our service center has still done well despite the challenging situation in the domestic market. Our service center is still fully performing and done well. Lifestyle business, because it's being a consumer driven business and a lot of the prices that we were fixed, so there we faced certain challenges. But now what we have done in lifestyle business is also we have gone and discussed with various government agencies and we've got a price variation clause done. So that way we're taking care of any kind of future aberrations that happen because of this. So both our domestic subsidiaries, definitely JSSL has done well. Q4 guidance for lifestyle is looking very good. We are seeing all our orders coming back in black. So that will also perform well. The global subsidiaries are under a bit of a pressure right now. And that will take, I would say, another 2 quarters till the global demand is back up and running or the export duty moves out. Till then, there will be still pressure on those two subsidiaries.
Understood, sir. So just one last clarification. So we did not see any one of, like some of your peers, one of inventory losses or any kind of one of losses during this quarter.
As I mentioned, that inventory losses are difficult to be separated for us. It's inventory losses is like the negative inventory valuation, which is the falling raw material prices. That there, as we mentioned, it was there in Q2, even in Indian company as well as the across, because then in the falling recession prices, you will always have a negative inventory valuation. But those numbers cannot be quantified because it's blended with the part of EBITDA by the time it gets passed on.
Understood, sir. That's all from my side, and thank you for taking my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ritwik Sheth from One Up Financial. Kindly proceed.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, sir, and thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I have a couple of questions. Firstly, what is the capex for the rest of the year in H2? and for FY24?
The capex in H2 should be in the range of around maybe 600 to 700 crore. And
both the entities combined.
Yeah, both the entities combined around say 700 crore capex you can take.
Okay. And F24, what would be the maintenance capex?
Maintenance capex between these two companies combined together runs close to a 350 crore of the number.
Okay, sure. And so my next question is on JUSL. What is the expansion status there to 3.6 million tons and when will it be completed?
So, JUSL expansion is on time. I think by end of this fiscal year, that also should be completed.
Okay. So, it will be at 3.6 million, right?
Yes.
Right. And it seems the debt has decreased from March 22 numbers. Is that understanding right?
In JSL?
In JUSL?
Slightly, yes. That debt has decreased slightly, yes.
Okay, sure. And what would be the pro forma net worth of the company? I believe there will be some cancellation, so if you can share that number, if it's
around 10,400.
Okay, sure. Okay, so the investments in JSHA will get cancelled out, right?
Yeah, cancel out, and then there will be some kind of additional addition also. So the total impact will be around 10,400. This is pro forma number. The actual number when it is calculated, it might be a little bit different, but so far pro forma number is this one.
Sure. And sir, just one last question on JUSL. We mentioned that sometime in FY24 we'll be acquiring, we'll be completing the acquisition. Does that timeline stay?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll be paying out that 950 crores and we'll be getting in the debt of about 2000 crores.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Okay. Sure, sir. All the best and thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankit Devra from Kotak Investment. Kindly proceed.
Good evening, sir. Just a couple of questions. One, on the JUSL acquisition, any specific milestones or by when we expect the payout? Anything in H2 or everything in FY24?
So, we have got the shareholder approval now and we expect to close this in FY23 itself. We gave the timeline till June 23 last time, but I think on all priority now approvals have been received. We will close this transaction during this financial year.
Okay. And in terms of capex in JUSL, are we undertaking any blast furnace capex or something? There were some press releases around orders given to SRX projects or something. So this tends to be current capex or?
No, there is no blast furnace. This JUSL will be coming with the hot strip mill and cold roll unit as it is to the existing setup.
Okay. Okay, sir. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hitesh Arora from Unify Capital. Kindly proceed.
Yeah, thank you. Just two questions. If you could update in the NCLT status, what happened in the last hearing? What's the expected? I mean, are we still confident of closing this by this financial year, the merger?
See, this hearing is to take into account of all the NOCs received from the various regulators, which is the tax authorities, GST authorities, and all the things, which has been filed already. Filed the note business certificate we have got from all has been filed to the court. Hearing is on 11th. So now, I'm not too sure whether this will be closed in this hearing or may have another short hearing, which is we have seen typical pattern in the Indian court. But even with that, we short gearing. We are, because now we know that all the authorities have submitted the NOCs to the court. So it's more a matter of process. And we hope to complete the transition in FY23 as per the guidance.
And just then, you know, on the JSL and JSL SR, just what we've given a guidance of 18,000 or maybe 18,000 to 20,000 EBITDA. Just what's the downside risk to the guidance? What can go wrong from here, you know, for us not to achieve this 18,000 to 20,000?
For FY23, I think 18,000 is right now an achievable guidance, looks like. Obviously, the downside risk always could be external market, but this time I would say 18,000 because we have crossed the two quarters and looking outward for the next 2-3 months, we are confident of delivering 18,000.
Okay. And for the next year, we'll see if it comes closer to the time. Would that be right?
Sorry, I didn't get it.
So the next year, for the next financial year, we'll see closer to the time.
Yeah, I think let's watch because there are too many volatility happening across on even policy front as well as the global front.
Sure. But we should be, all things equal, we should be getting another, say, 3,000 or 3,500 additional on account of the merger benefit, acquisition benefit of JUSL, which will see the tolling charge. That should also come to us, all things being equal.
Yes.
Sure. Okay, cool. Thanks. Let's continue in a moment.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhaval Shah from Anvil Wealth Management. Kindly proceed.
Hi. Congratulations on good set of numbers. Am I audible?
Mr. Shah, your audio is a bit low.
Is it fine now?
Yes, this is better. Thank you.
So I had a few questions. Firstly, on why there is an employee cost reduction in this quarter? Any one-off, or can you throw some color on that? Also, if you can share some details on the coal cost this quarter versus the last quarter and the current prices, and how the sourcing is done.
So employee cost was just some provision thing which we do on the certain thing, which was actually a certain adjustment on the provision. Your second question was on one was employee cost, second was
coal cost for power.
Our actually we did a very flexible thing on the power side.
So coal cost, though overall if we look at the linkages cost and the other cost on the spot prices were pretty much on the higher side. But strategically how we planned it is that we also procured the power from the grid. So in overall we just balanced our mix in terms of the cost on the terms of the per unit cost for us. So which has come down as compared to the last quarter if you look at.
Okay, so can you share the per unit cost?
Yeah, see, we keep doing the cost efficiency in a flexible way depending on the fuel prices. So as Shreya mentioned that sometime we actually put a pause and then bought it from the grids and when the coal was higher and then do the blending thing. So that's how we manage that entire cost.
Okay. And sir, if you share some lights on this Hygenco India tie-up or JV, how that deal is structured and is there any capex or money we need to invest into that?
So I can maybe quickly answer this. There is no capex involved at all from our side in this. It is a total investment done by Hygenco and it's a power purchase agreement. So it's a very pilot scale project. You know, we wanted to test this project out and if it does well and creates good amount of green hydrogen, then we will go for a larger scale setup. So this pilot scale is... Yeah.
So there is no capex or any investment?
No capex from our side.
Okay. And sir,
we have just provided them the land.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sir, one more question if you could answer. Sir, can you just throw on some light on the capital allocation policy over a longer period of time? Because we will be done with the capex by end of this year and we will be generating roughly good cash flows. So how it will be, are you looking for further capex or some payout or, you know, some color on that would be helpful.
So definitely, I think Anurag, you can take this up, but we would like to give some dividend next year. That is still on our cards. And Anurag, maybe you can answer this question.
Yeah, see, so as we mentioned last time, that board approved the new dividend policy where it was mentioned that obviously up to target dividend up to 20% of the PAT on a progressive basis in the future. But only after the merger we will consider that. And capex side on this thing, it's always a normal as you saw. We even in the capex cycle we continue to maintain the ratio very prudently. So I think that's what you should take it more as a that because as a growth we will always continue to look for the right opportunity, but obviously at the right ROE and in terms of the overall balancing our ratio.
Sure, sure. And sir, if I one more question, if I could ask, sir, on JUSL, you said that the capex will be completed by end of this year. So, is there any capex, whatever the capex for H2, is there any debt required or it would be fulfilled from an internal approval only for JUSL?
No, there would be additional debt drawn in JUSL.
Okay, can you quantify it, approx?
It would be probably 200 to 300 crore.
Okay, and capex for H2 in JUSL?
It's ongoing. It's all, as I told you, that it's what the number which will be drawing the loan accordingly now.
Okay. Thank you, sir. That was helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants are requested to kindly restrict your questions to 2 per participant. The next question is from the line of Chetan Shah from Jeet Capital. Kindly proceed. Mr. Chetan Shah. Mr. Chetan Shah, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Yes, sir, can you proceed?
Hello.
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Yeah, so I just wanted to know the JUSL debt number. Is it 1955?
It's 1965.
1965. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Suraj Kosate from Axis Bank. Kindly proceed.
Hello. Hi, sir. I just have a couple of questions. The first one is on finance cost of JSL. So I see that it has increased steeply by around 19% this quarter on sequential basis. If you could provide some detail on this. And second one is that some of the recent media articles suggested that government is planning to impose anti-dumping duties on stainless steel manufactured from China. So, are you aware of these events, or and how likely is the possibility of implementation of this? And if this is implemented, what could be the impact on volume?
So, let me answer first on the interest first. This quarter, there was one-off items of around 8 crores in the JSL cost, which was one was on. The interest on the income tax, advance tax, which was because last year, obviously, as we progressed on the EBITDA, the advance tax, because at the end of the year, the EBITDA increased in initial advance tax was in a shortfall. So that was on this thing, as well as there was one interest payment on the settlement with the NESCO, which is the power utility company. So that was the one which was there, which is coming into interest cost. And some of the other costs which we do actually as part of the working capital management, actually the income from the debtors and discounting is going into the other income. So it's not getting net off in GSL. That's how it's been reflected. Your second question was on this anti-dumping. I don't know what are you referring to. Are you referring to some of the court case which happened in Gujarat?
No, I think this is ADD, CVD on pipe and tube coming from China. That is what your question was?
Right, yes.
So that does happen, see, because we are not very big into pipe and tube ourselves. We are a supplier to them. So this is a welcome move and it's a good positive sign for us because that would help us further push our volumes. And this is exactly what we have been telling the government, that more people have become traders. They have started shutting their pipe and tube making facilities here and started trading material from China. So that would definitely be a very positive and welcome move by us.
Okay, that's it from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saket Kapoor from Kapoor & Company. Kindly proceed.
Yeah, namaskar sir, and thank you for the opportunity. Sir, if you could provide us historically, what was our domestic and export mix? As we have seen that we are currently more 95% towards the domestic market. So the 2-3 year average, if you could provide.
See, Saket, as you mentioned, with our agile model, we keep fluctuating in our export and domestic mix depending on the margins and the volumes that we can get. So, typically, if you see the quarter four of last year, we reached to almost as high as the export volume of 30%. On a full year basis, FY22, export volume was 21%. And currently, this quarter it has come down to 5, so it's quite fluctuating. Last quarter, it was still, for Q1 was 17%. H1 overall, we still maintain 12% now. I can keep giving you the many numbers, but I think overall, the blended volumes and the margins which we target.
So, sir, just wanted to understand the customer profile there in the export market. When these kind of shift in towards the domestic market, how are the customers in the export market then fed? And what actually happens to those customers who were buyers of our product earlier, if we take the long-term averages also?
See, so our customers are still with us, you know, despite all these challenges and disruption, there has been a recession and a slowdown in their market itself. And like I said, we have long-standing approvers, long-standing supplies, quality supplies that we have given. So it's only a short-term aberration that is there. As soon as export duty or the European market picks up again, then our volumes and our supplies to these customers will again start.
Okay, sir. And two small points. Firstly, sir, what are the benefits in terms of this acquisition of JUSL and how is it going to be funded? And it is going to be consummated in FY24? The one which we have taken.
The JUSL transaction, as you mentioned, that it will we are targeting to close in FY23 itself. And it will make us a completely integrated stainless steel play and also eliminate all the related party transaction. So with JUSL, just to give you the number, FY22 almost 1700 crore transactions were there for the related party because it was doing a job work. So all these will help us to improve the governance and eliminate all these related party transactions, and which would have increased further with our increased capacity. So it will make us a completely integrated stainless steel player with all facilities into the listed entity. That's how I think.
And is there going to be a cash transaction completely? So this 958 crore aggregate value that we have put?
Yes, it will be a cash transaction.
And who is the ultimate beneficiary in the transaction for JUSL? Who is owning the same?
It's OPGSTPL is the company which is owning this company.
That was the last question. Thank you. We would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Let me thank everyone for attending this call. Sorry, Abhyuday is actually just on the call, so I'm taking this on his behalf. We have been focusing on our agile business strategy to mitigate the external challenges. I am confident that our strategic steps will augment the future performance of the company. I hope we have been able to answer all your questions satisfactorily. Should you need any further clarification or like to know more about the developments, please feel free to contact our investor relations team. Thank you once again for taking the time to join us on this call. Have a great time ahead.
Thank you. On behalf of Nuvama Wealth Management, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.